Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Pamela Brewer welcoming you to this edition of Men's Monday here on Mind Talk. Men's Monday is the day every Monday when we get to meet you and I, a man who is doing interesting things in his life and having interesting experiences. Today's guest is no different. I'm very pleased to introduce to you Dan Adams, who is an award-winning film director and writer. Dan Adams, welcome to Mind Talk.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, Dan, I'd like to start with where you were born and get a sense of your early experiences and early influence. So let's start with where you were born.
I was born in Elizabeth, New Jersey. Grew up in the suburbs from a big family, and from a family full of musicians, and grew up in the church, so a lot of my brothers and sisters either sung in the choir or played an instrument. God didn't bless me with those talents. I can't sing a lick, I can't play an instrument, but I took a liking to the technical aspects of production for some reason. And from my early childhood, I always gravitated towards electronic equipment, whether it be programming like VCRs or dealing with anything electronical. So those would be my early starts of my childhood in relation to what I do now.
Well, when you say that you come from a large family, what does large mean? How many brothers and sisters?
Nine.
That's large.
Five girls and four boys. From the same mother, natural birth.
Okay.
So, same parents.
All right. So she deserves about 14 medals.
Exactly. All gold.
Tell me.
Gold medals.
All gold medals. Sounds like a man who appreciates his parents.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, they've endured a lot from having nine children in one household with one bathroom.
Oh, my.
You know? So,
oh, my.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can imagine the conflicts.
I don't want to imagine, but yes, I can. Let me ask you this. Clearly you grew up in a household where creativity was embraced and encouraged. What was your sense of what your parents' goals were for you growing up? Did they share that with you, or did they want each of you to come to your own views?
Well, it was put God first and the rest will follow. Grew up, like I said, in a very religious home, to church-going parents, and we were church-oriented first during the week, Sundays. So they wanted us to never forget why we are here and to give God the glory and to give and the praises that he's justly due. And then after that, all things will be added unto you that you set out to achieve your goals, whether it's college, whether it's having a full-time job, whether it's starting a family. So they wanted us to keep the head first. Now, not only down the head of the household, but, you know, God in our lives. So I will put it in that perspective.
So it's interesting because they wanted you to have a solid faith foundation. But then after that, it sounds like they were willing to leave you all to sort of your own interests and your own devices with respect to what you would do in your life.
Yes, it's because my parents, they're old school. So they come from an era and from a time period where once you graduated high school, that high school diploma is good enough to get you a good job where you can be at for 30 years. You know, nowadays, people jump around from job to job so much, it's hard to find people who stay at a job for 5 years, let alone 30 years, you know.
It's true.
My dad, he put in time over 30 years working for the postal office. He didn't have a college education or a college degree. You know, my mother didn't have a college degree. So some of these things that that we were blessed to have. It's because of the foundations or the hard legwork that, you know, they instilled in us, you know, to go out and get it with your own two feet. Don't expect scholarships to be flying on your table, or don't expect to give handouts, but you have to work hard for what you want. You know, you make the choice and you choose on your own, set out on your own path. So, you know, like I said, they come from a generation where it was you went out, you got a job, you know, with your high school diploma or with a little bit that you have.
Mm-hmm.
So we took that and we, you know, we ran with it, you know, as far as we can. So is to take the little bit of change in our pockets and work for what we want, you know?
It's not a bad foundation from which to fly, quite frankly, because it sounds like
Right. You
were all really taught a sense of self-awareness, self-respect, that you were going to work hard and get your own on your own, but that you were going to work. You weren't going to expect that people would sort of drop gifts on your table, which would be nice, but doesn't often happen. Tell me about...
Listen, we had to work.
Yeah.
I mean, growing up with a big family, we had to share, to work for what we want, you know, in our own household, you know, from whether it was, we had, you know, one TV for a long period of time, so we had to work on learning how to share, how to do certain things with just within our own family household. So that word work, it's not a, there's a lot of subtext within that word right there that has a greater meaning and a greater understanding of just how to move around in this world. You have to work. You know, the Bible says you will work while it's day. You know, when night comes, you know, no man can work. So we have to be willing and able to put in that time within our craft with whatever that we set out to do, just like what we did when we was growing up. So definitely working was a big motivational factor with all the children, you know, from growing up.
So working together, collaborating, sounds like negotiations were a skill that you had to learn within such a large family. So you're sounds
absolutely
like,
because if we wanted, we each had our own chores for certain days. You know, I remember like my days to wash dishes, you know, but if I wanted to go to the playground and I wanted to hang out with my friends who were doing something on a Wednesday, I would have to negotiate with, you know, one of my sisters to say, hey, you know, I will do your dishes for the next two days if you do my dishes today, you know? So, like, little things like that, compromising and collaborating and understanding, you know, it was instilled, you know, from early on.
And also being a person of your word. Because with those negotiations, if you said okay to your sister but didn't follow through, she certainly wasn't going to collaborate with you the next time.
Right, and there was nowhere to hide. You know, she knew where I lived. She knew where my room was.
Indeed.
So it wasn't like, you know, we can get away with something. Yeah, so we had to be, our word was our bond, you know, or there would have been problems.
Which, again, is a powerful message and lesson for everyone to learn. I would suggest that your word, you want to teach people that your word means something, and it means something to you.
Yes.
What was the racial makeup in the area in which you grew up and in the schools which you attended?
It was predominantly white, but the section, I grew up in a section of a township called Woodbridge Township, New Jersey. And from our general area, like from grade school on up, it was predominantly white. But here's the thing. I grew up, my street and the area where we lived on, it was a bunch of African-American households. So it was like, I want to say the hood within the suburbs, but it was definitely Black, family-oriented, like a little cluster of us that grew up in this certain section within the suburbs. And back then, we were very pop culture aware, meaning back when breakdancing was big, there would be kids out in the streets with the cardboard breakdancing. There would be cookouts. So it was African-American culturally oriented as you're going to get within the circumference of a white suburban majority.
So again, it's interesting because it sounds like you had the experience of negotiating different kinds of people, different cultures. So in a lot of ways, it sounds like a rich experience.
Yes, it was diverse. Growing up, I had a lot of diverse friends from Asian, African-American, white, Jewish. So there was opportunities to get to know other ethnicities and other cultures, which was appreciated from early on. I remember when I was in the sixth grade, we had this Indian family move into the neighborhood, and I remember my first experiencing the Indian culture with going to his Indian birthday. So, and that was, I also believe, 11 or 12 years old. And it wasn't like a make fun of or kids going around, making jokes. It was like we had like a fun time. And that's all we cared about back then, was just having a fun time, being kids, doing what kids do.
Unfortunately, it's not quite that way in many pockets of the country nowadays, but that's another conversation. Your passion for writing and directing films, how many of your peers were actually doing that?
When you
entered into the Art Institute of Philadelphia. Let's start
right.
with why. Why there? Why Art Institute? Why not any number of other professions that were perhaps seen as more traditional?
Right. Well, my first passion, my first love was music producing. And I wanted to be the next Puff Daddy. This was in the mid-90s when Puff Daddy was large. And, somebody that I looked up to as an entrepreneur. And I loved, like I said, I loved technical equipment. So in my high school days, and even for my church organizations, I would be the soundboard operator, the video operator, and music producing was something that I gravitated toward.
What did you like about producing music?
Oh, the chance of being creative. Everything falls back towards creative freedom. And I'm a big hip hop fan, New York hip hop, and I love just creating hip hop music, hip hop R&B back then. And I also was just beginning songwriting, so working with artists was another big joy that I got from producing music. So it was just seeing the results, and then seeing people react to the things that you made. So it could be from somebody blasting a beat that I made from their car, So that was a motivational factor. So I wanted to get into the music business to actually become an A&R and design and discover and to produce talent. So that was my reason on going to the Art Institute of Philadelphia, where I majored in music business, because I wanted to have the formal educational background in getting into the music industry.
What was it like the first time you heard somebody playing your music?
Playing it was one half, but the reaction was the most fulfilling part. When you know, seeing people, you know, popping their heads and actually dancing to it, that was something is as close to indescribable, and it's hard for me not to describe something being a writer, but it's a moment that I wish I could relive or have a videotape where I could actually see it again and rewind it and rewind it. It's just one of those things that I wish I could see again.
Sounds like you need to create more music.
Yes. Well, that's coming.
Okay. After the degree in music business, you went on to get a degree in media studies with a concentration in TV and film production. So clearly, I mean, your entire educational pursuit was all about creativity, and the business of creativity. When you were working in the music industry, I'm wondering, was there anything that particularly particularly surprised you about your working in the music industry?
So when I was working for Atlantic Records at a particular time in the video production department, and that's where I learned the most and what motivated me to actually start creating my own content. But it was, I didn't know how the conception part of music videos, the production of music videos, took place. And when I got to learn the process, what happens is the label starts to put out the word that say, for instance, like we had an artist, Brandy, at that time, and they will put out a word to various music directors, music video directors, that they're seeking to do a music video for Brandy's first single off her new album. So they will put out the word to their various music video directors. The music video directors would then in turn create a treatment from listening to the album, listening to the single, listening to the tone of the marketing plan, and create conceptually a video treatment for their idea for how they want to shoot the music video. So, and then the label in turn will get maybe about 10 to 12 treatment selections from various directors and basically decide on which one they want to go with. You know, then they'll narrow it down to the top three and then choose the top one and so on and so forth. So just the process of selections and how that works into play with creating the music video content. I wouldn't say surprising as in a negative way. I would say surprising in a positive way, that they sought out, you know, several different avenues to get to that one main highway.
And what's interesting is to hear you talk about the tone of the marketing plan. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, I'd like for you just to clarify what you mean by that and how that impacted the process of the creation of a music video. We're going to take a break, and we will be right back. Folks, this is Pamela Brewer.
Great.
Don't go away. We're coming back. Thank you. Dan Adams, award-winning film director and writer, but right now we're talking about your earlier days in the music business, the tone of a marketing plan. What does that mean, and how would that impact the formation of a video?
Well, to give a good example is when an artist wants to be perceived as more mature, more adult, more adult-driven content. So that plan has to be reflected in the images that we see. To give an early example, going back to the 90s, when, remember the group Escape?
Yes.
So their first album, it was very street-driven. It was very young, youthful. But as the years went on, one of their next albums, it was very adult-driven, very more adult R&B sounding. You know, they wanted to show that they're, you know, mature, grown women capable of doing classical love ballads. You know, one of the hit songs was "Who Can I Run To?" I believe. I might be messing that title up, but the Escape fans know what song I'm talking about. So, and the music video reflected their marketing plan. Their new image. Which was very, very adult, very sexy. These weren't young girls from the hood riding around on the hoods of a car. You know, it was very classy and very adult and very sexy. So, what I mean by the tone of the marketing plan reflects the images and the target that the artist and the label are going for that artist. Now, when I was back in Atlanta in the early 2000s, Ray J was first starting out his solo career when he had the hit single "Wait a Minute." But if you remember Ray J, he was always tied to the hip of Brandy, you know. So when his album came out, one of the big points in the marketing plan was to separate him from Brandy. He had this this name that was attached to him. They used to call him Brandy's brother and not Ray J, you know. So one of the key points in that whole project was separating himself, being in his own identity, that he's his own man, that could produce, that could write, that could sing on his own two feet.
Interesting. So, in fact, there is a great deal of research, thought, and work that goes into the production of a music video that I think, as people are looking at it, may not really have a thought about all of the preparation that went into those few minutes that you see on the television or somewhere else.
Yes, absolutely. A lot of work and planning goes behind the images that we see that corresponds to the music that we hear. Even in the TV shows or the films that we see, there's a lot of pre-production planning.
Just as an aside, because I do want to get more into what you're doing in film and writing today, but
all right.
As you think about or as you listen to the music that's out now, lots of different kinds of music, lots of different genres, some of the music for some is a little dicey, a little bit objectionable,
mm-hmm.
a lot objectionable. What's your thought about the world of music today and the direction in which you would like to see it go moving forward?
I think we are in a good place with music, and I'm one of the few that say that. Because I say that because we don't have to tune into terrestrial radio to find good content. If we rely on what's only on terrestrial radio, then we won't find what we're looking for if we're looking for good music all the time. But we live in an age where the independent artists have so much control over their own content, whether it be from social media, iTunes, putting out their own music, going to see independent artists. We have to really seek out music. It's out there. We just have to do more work, as I was going back to in the beginning of our conversation, putting in that work, putting in that legwork to follow, to find the music and the artist that we like. Just don't expect to turn on the radio and we're going to hear what we want, because a lot of that is being shunned out by the ratchet music. There's a lot of ratchetness going on. But we have to be diligent. We have to really seek out good music and music to our liking and to our taste. And it's out there. We have to really get out there more and just don't expect it to fall on our plate or for the music industry to provide that for us or to us, because we're going to be disappointed a lot of the times, 9 times out of 10. But I just came back from seeing Flowetry a few weeks ago, and those girls, they could still put it on a great show. Oh my goodness. Tyrese, he's another great artist. So good music is out there. We just have to go a little bit longer, search a little bit more and more deeply into what we want to get at the end of the day.
You know, I think I hear remnants of your earlier training from your parents. You know, you got to do your work, look for it, you'll find it, but do your work.
Yes, yes, absolutely. You used a great word before in research, and that's what we have to do. And basically, even parents now, they have to do research on what comes in to their homes as far as media, what comes on this station at what time, and they just can't allow anything to come across the screen that their young children is going to, you know, it might be that they might see, you know.
Okay.
There's so much content out there right now that wasn't out there before, and I mean to say that not in a negative way, but in just a realistic way. 20 years ago, you know, we didn't have TV characters talking about lesbian relationships, gay relationships, threesomes, and a lot of things that need to be monitored. And like I said, I don't mean that in a negative way. I just meant that research, diligence, goes a long way.
So we've all got way more options than we used to have in terms of what we allow into our homes and our heads and our hearts. And you're saying take the time to find out what's out there and choose what you want to have in your home, in your head, in your heart.
Absolutely. Choice goes a long way. There are so many different options, and it looks like the envelope for content keeps getting pushed and pushed and pushed. So we have to be more and more diligent into what our loved ones see. We just have to be on our P's and Q's, because if we're looking for good content, it might be masked behind the ratchet content that's out there now. You know, if the world of love and hip hop comes on at a certain time, you know, and we don't want our children to watch that for whatever reason, then we have to give them a choice. We have to do our due diligence and say, hey, this also comes on at this time, at this hour. Why don't you give this other program, this other show, a chance? So it's all about providing alternative content. We used the word choices before. More choices, definitely. And, you know, like, if we don't get out there and know what's out there, then we will never give ourselves or give the ones that we are, that we do want to parent or we do want to raise up, we won't give them options to decide from. So, I'll leave that at that.
Okay, choice is a good thing.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you this. We talked about television for a second, you've actually done, in terms of expanding content, you've done web series and short films, as well as music videos and documentaries. So let's talk about web series, for example. How does something like that come together, and what is a web series you did that you really can talk to us about?
Okay, when I did a web series, it wasn't even called a web series. I didn't even know I was doing a web series. This was back in 07, 08. And for one of my thesis projects in film school, I didn't do a short film or a full feature film. I wanted to do a talk show, a full talk show in front of a live audience, with host, with a band leader, with interviewing celebrity guests. And I wanted that. I sought out, it was a very ambitious project, but that's something that I wanted to do, and I did it. The response from it was so overwhelmingly good that people wanted to see more episodes. So I took that and I started just producing more episodes in a little bar / lounge in Manhattan. And where it had the capabilities of television production, meaning camera crew, lighting, sound, a live audience. There was a band there. And I just started producing several episodes and putting them up on a website. And like I said, back then, it wasn't called, web series wasn't a common term as it is today. But now that we look back on it, yeah, that's exactly what I was doing, just putting the content out there off of the demand that was generated. And from back then, it took so much of a financial burden on me, I just couldn't keep producing, you know, show after show. So, I mean, but it was a great, great learning experience. And I'm sorry, what was the second part of your question?
Well, I was wondering if there was a web series that you had done that you wanted to tell us about, but it sounds like you've answered the question just in describing that series that you didn't even know was a web series. You were ahead of your time.
Yeah, and the beauty about it is it's something that, like I said, it takes a lot, and I didn't even know And like I said, back at that time, I was still in film school and still producing this web series, a talk show, which is a big undertaking. Like, it's from a financial burden, from a production burden. And it's something that I said, okay, I have the template right now. Let me put this on the shelf and let me come back to it when I'm capable of producing this or taking this to somewhere, a network, to be picked up. So allowing yourself to find yourself in the independent world is crucial. Finding your directorial voice, finding your creative path, finding what kind of director, what producer you are, how you collaborate with people, how you develop ideas, how you bounce off different ideas, how you learn to crawl before you can walk, how you fail before you succeed. So all these things that I'm mentioning were the learning curve and the learning process that I took from producing that independent web series. And I say that to motivate other independent artists out there that you need to find something to where you find yourself, whether it's your project or on somebody else's project. You have to find yourself. Whatever position that you seek out, whether it be a director or a producer or a cinematographer or a camera person, find a opportunity to where you get to work out your wrinkles, you know, to where you get to develop yourself, develop your own ideas, your craft, and get good at it and then perfect it. And then that's the beauty about the independent world, is that we have so much access to equipment, to different avenues that allow us to become great from being good. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, you know, those opportunities weren't around, either because the equipment cost was so high, or the, even the idea seemed so far-fetched. But now it's not. Ideas and great content are being shot with an iPhone. So yes, the possibilities are now ground level. They're not on the 30th floor. Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense. You know, it's interesting to hear you say you need to crawl before you can walk. You need to fail before you succeed. And you say it from the positive place of, you know, each step is a process, but with each step you also learn. And,
yes,
you know, to those who are listening who are thinking, you know, I really have, let's say I have a good idea for a documentary, so I'm going to go shoot it tomorrow. What do you say to that person?
Right.
I got the idea today. I'm going to shoot it tomorrow. Is that realistic?
I wouldn't say no. I wouldn't say yes. But if there was a meter, the arrow would be pointing close enough.
Okay.
Because before you can shoot something, you have to plan to shoot. I'm very big on pre-production and planning and mapping things out before you just go and do something. We used the word research before, you know. There's in every documentary a big bulk of the production plan is research. Research your source material. So it is realistic to shoot something, but the best case scenario for you to succeed is putting in that work into pre-production and planning and into research and into knowing your subject and your source material. Have a plan of action. Just don't act. Have a plan to act.
So
and
really,
then have a backup plan when your first plan fails.
Gotcha. The other thing that I would suggest about planning is that it also saves you money in the long run. Saves you money and it saves you time in the long run.
And a little, one of the best advice that I can give an independent artist now is, yes, go out and shoot something. Do something on your own first. Learn how you're going to make mistakes, but it's better to make mistakes using your own money than using a company's money, MTV, or blowing something that can cost you your job, cost you your integrity, cost you something that has a greater emphasis on your career. If you want to be the best cameraman and you want to shoot for MTV, learn how to use a camera on your own first. Rent a camera, you know, and learn different camera techniques. And then if you're going to have a mistake, mess up, that loss is on you. Not a loss, but that mistake is on you, rather than having it on MTV's expense, where it could cost you something greater.
Yeah,
because
then they don't want to see you again, and they don't want to hire you again.
Exactly.
Dan,
that's just one example of many different, you know, positions out there that you can hone your craft.
Dan, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, I'd like your take on internships and whether or not folks who are interested in moving into these various fields should pursue internships or literally pick up a camera and just kind of go do their thing to figure it out. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will return with this conversation. Dan Adams, don't go away. Dan, how important are internships nowadays?
Internships is a golden opportunity because I'm the type of person where I think bigger than what's given to me at hand. Yes, internships are great for learning the craft or being in that environment, but think bigger and think outside the box and think relationship building. So your internship coordinator, your boss, the people that work around you, you can build relationships from an internship and learning your craft. So you have to think about maximizing that opportunity to its fullest potential. So I would say that anybody, if you have an internship opportunity knocking at your door, answer it and don't hesitate. Take it and run with it and build with it. Build relationships, emails, numbers, social media, follow all their contacts, stay in contact, because 5 years down the line, you never know who somebody might be. So
it sounds like I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. No, internships, in another word, that's a golden opportunity.
It sounds like you're saying that investing in yourself and in your craft and in the thing that you love includes really making use of your ability to connect with people on a personal level and to maintain those connections.
Yes. It's one half of the battle, and you use the correct wording, investing yourself. People will remember you as well as what you can do. Interning, since you won't be asked to do much, people will remember you more so than what you can do or what you're asked up to do. So if you build good, solid relationships that's built off of trust and reliability and dependability and confidence, then that goes a long way.
And I would suggest that if you don't learn how to believe in yourself, you won't be able to teach others to believe in you either.
Absolutely. You have to look in yourself in the mirror, and you have to say, before anybody else can say to you, I'll take for instance, my example. I'm a director. Like, I look myself in the mirror every day, and I know who I am. And I can say that with confidence. So everybody else, they have to believe in themselves and whatever craft that they do, that they are that person. And if you're a writer, you have to know that you're a writer and that you're good with coming up, that you're great in coming up with storylines, with dialogues, with different scripts. So it starts with you. It starts with you and it ends with you and the belief and the confidence in yourself. Because when it comes to problem solving and when it comes to your plan A not panning out, you have to rely on yourself. Okay, what do I do next?
And I would suggest that sometimes that plan B is so much better than what you thought plan A was.
Exactly. So You definitely need to be strong-minded in this business.
The film short that you wrote entitled The Spirit of Eve, I'd like to know a little bit about what that was about, but also your process in creating that.
Well, I'll start with your latter question. I got motivated because it was around a few years, about 5-6 years ago, and I was watching one of these psychological thrillers that dealt with spirit possession, and I was watching it with another friend of mine, like, why do all these movies follow the same formula? meaning that is always a young white girl that gets possessed by a demonic spirit or a spirit, and it's always the Catholic Church or some white priest that's involved in conquering the spirit. And that got my creative juices flowing into wanting to change up how that is displayed. So I started research on this genre, on from horror to psychodramas to psychological thrillers to spirit possessions that dealt with the same concept. How I was different, I took it from a Black experience. I took it from a Baptist experience and a Black family experience. And I took a family and I took a young girl, African-American girl, and I took the same genre premises that that she was possessed by a spirit and that it was doing harm to her body and that, you know, she needed spiritual uplifting from a Black preacher, Black family, Black background point of view. And the unique thing about it, I love stories from the Bible, whether it be the story of Job, whether it be the story of Jonah and the whale, whether it be Samson and Delilah. And when I was searching for source material, that's what I gravitated towards. And I said, let me take a deeper look into Adam and Eve, and really more Eve, and why did she do the things she did, and how was she deceived, and things like that, and what happened to her after her ordeal in the Garden of Eden. So I basically took that subject material and I kind of crafted it into the storyline of the spirit of Eve. And I made her a earthbound spirit that wanted to take possession of a certain female's body. So that's what the foundation and the background and the motivation came from for this short film, that it was a unique twist on spirit possession movies, psychological dramas, psychological thrillers, and gave it a Black experience point of view.
How was it viewed by others when you completed the work?
And I could say this I had another great moment in that this short film was my first short film, and it was my first really public viewing of a work that I did, meaning in theaters. And the reception that I got from it was so shocking that I didn't think that they would like it as much as they did. Because not only because of the subject material and the people on camera that they saw and the way that they saw it, but I left a big cliffhanger at the end where it was a to be continued, and they wanted more. They wanted to see what happened. They wanted a part two. They wanted, you know? So the reception from it was overwhelmingly great.
That's wonderful. You know, as I think about all the things you've done, you've directed, you've done screenplays, you have certainly worked in the music industry, you have written film reviews, you've done interviews on camera and off with you as the interviewer. I mean, it sounds like you have had direct experience in almost every area of the media, if you will. Is that something that you would recommend to those entering into the profession or thinking about it, that they try to get as many different experiences in as many different roles as they can?
Well, I would frame it in the words where I would say, think outside of the box. Expand your horizons. Expand yourself. I never thought that I would do, because I'm so focused on directing and working behind the camera. But an opportunity came to me where it was presented to me to do some interviewing work in front of the camera. And I said, of course I could do that if I'm, you know, already had experience in developing talk shows and developing, you know, my own content. I said, let me try this. Let me do things, some things in front of the camera that could help me build relationships, that could help me build contacts, that could help my brand. So anything that helps your brand, that expands your horizons, that builds your brand, I say definitely go for it, and that you shouldn't be just thinking on a one-way street, but think of yourself as a multi-lane highway, that you're success-driven off of many different talents and opportunities that you create for yourself. And that was, the more that you put out into the universe, into the world, the better you are of that same positive reinforcement coming back to you.
Dan, I'm curious about how you define success for yourself. Is it in what you've done, what you will do, what you're working on now? What does success look like to Dan Adams?
Success looks, and you know, I actually answered this for myself a few months ago, and it came off of something that I didn't even see coming. So when you set out, I set out for something, and I was blessed enough to receive it. But then on top of that, another opportunity came that I didn't even see coming. So when you get blessed with things that are abundant on top of things that you set out for, that is just, if there's a greater word than success, that's it. Because once you accomplish a goal, it makes you hungrier, it makes you more determined, it makes you more driven, it makes you more eager to get out there and want to do more. So I would define success is accomplishing your goal, whatever that is.
Could someone come to you today and say, you know, Dan Adams, I don't really like what you're doing. In fact, I don't really like anything that you've done. I think you should just quit all this and go do something else. What would you say?
I would say you don't know me. You don't know where I'm cut from. I love creative matters. I love being a creative person. I love working off of imagination. This is something that God has made me. This is me. So for somebody that don't like me or like what I do, it motivates me to say, you know what? You come back to me tomorrow or a month from now or a year from now, let's see. I bet you I could change your point of view into liking
interesting
one thing that I've done. I'm not trying to get you to like 10 things I'm done, but I bet you I could give them the right opportunity, the right circumstance to change that point of view. So somebody that says things one day, no, I don't let that get to me at all.
So perhaps the moral to that is, again, it goes back to really believing in yourself, being clear about what you want, and then following your own path.
Right. And, you know, I'll give you a short story. When I was in film school and I really got to study certain films, especially certain foreign films that weren't in English, you know, I said to myself, what am I going to learn from this? I don't like this. You know, I don't get it. But after watching it a few times, after giving it some time, after putting in that work of studying, it was like a light bulb hit. And we all have our light bulb moments, whatever that is in whatever subject or whatever topic or whatever we are dealing with, you know? all it needs is time and opportunity and chance. So that's all I'm looking for.
So I think consistently what I hear from you is believe in yourself and do what you do.
Absolutely, absolutely. And don't be afraid of change. Don't be afraid of tweaking. Don't have a big ego saying, I got, this great idea. Ain't nothing going to change it. Ain't nothing going to, I'm not going to move off this. Things need tweaking. Things need, diamonds need to be shaped, So it's all about the process and always moving forward in what you want to do. You always want to move forward. You don't want to move sideways. You definitely don't want to move back, but keep pushing forward.
Dan Adams, I have to thank you so much for spending time today with us. Award-winning film director, writer, just done so many things. Dan, is there a website you can share for folks who'd like to follow your work and your career?
Yes, but before I plug myself, you talked about opportunities earlier, and I really want to get this out to people in the independent film world that great opportunities are out there. You have to seek them. And one big way is attending film festivals. Like, I feel that every person in the industry should attend film festivals. And there's one big one coming up called the American Black Film Festival, where they are providing so much resources, so much great opportunities, so much great. They're working with TV One to find screenplays. They're working with VH1 to find content, with HBO to find content. So opportunities are out there. So, and that's going to be held in Miami June 5th through the 19th. And film festivals are a great way to network, build relationships, and to further your career. As far as me, you can find me on my website, danadamsfilms.com, or Facebook or Twitter at Dan Adams Films, and Instagram. And I have some big things, big announcements to make over the next month, and to follow me there.
We certainly shall. Thank you again so much for your time and for sharing your experience in this industry. We appreciate you, Dan. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace any work you may choose to do with a professional of your choosing. Mind Talk is available to you on demand at myndtalk.org. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. If you'd like to be in touch with me directly, send me an email at If you'd like to be in touch with me, send me an email to pamela@mindtalk.org. That's myndtalk.org. And of course, Pamela is PAMELA. And folks, remember always, if it's unacceptable, that's exactly, precisely what it is. Unacceptable. You take care.